TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
And welcome into Conduits of Trouble. And actually, it's not Mackie and Judd. It is Zolgad and Chip Scoggins, Star Tribune sports columnist, my buddy, as we chat every week on Conduits about ongoing topics in sports in this town. And Chipper, we got to start here, our old beat. So a few days ago, I said, you know, I don't think that the North Division in the NFC is all that strong, but I think the Vikings can win, you know, 10 games. And I think the 10 games could win them a division championship. How did you feel a couple days ago? And how do you feel, I guess, more appropriately now that we know Danielle Hunter is sidelined on IR, which means he has to miss at least three games, and I'm guessing it's more because of a neck injury?
I will do a spoiler alert, Judd, for my Star Tribune official pick. I said 9-7.
That's what I said.
I said 9-7, and I got to be honest with you, I'm not so sure 9-7 won't win the division this year. You know, maybe somebody's going to have to win 10 games. I don't think anybody in division is going to win 11. But I would say, yeah, 9-7 looks very optimistic. Now, if it's just three games, if it's more than that with Hunter, which we don't know at this point, they weren't exactly forthcoming all the way through this. So why are they going to be forthcoming now? So if you don't have him, boy, those young cornerbacks are really going to have to play well, because this whole premise was, when they made a big trade, bolster your pass rush as best you can,
yep,
because you have to make quarterbacks get the ball out of their hands quick to help out your back end, which is a major question mark at this point. So, yeah, I'll stick with 9-7 for now, but if it's more than three games, I think I would adjust that projected record.
So in your career covering sports, I'd ask you this question. When is the last time that you covered a guy who showed up on an injury report or was sidelined with a neck problem where it wasn't a big deal? Because I keep saying this. If you have a stiff neck, okay, which a lot of guys do, you go to a chiropractor, you get adjusted, and then you play. And it might hurt, but you play through it. I don't think I have ever covered any athlete, though, who's officially shown up on a report sidelined by a neck problem where in retrospect, we all sort of laugh and be like, wow, did they overblow that injury?
No, I laugh because this situation reminds me of when you and I are beating. It's kind of an inside joke with us with the Medea Williams.
Yes.
Back when they told us it was not anything. I don't know if they used the word tweak, but they said it was something minor. And then we saw him with one of those braces on his head and neck, so we knew it was not a minor neck injury. And no, I mean, that's the thing that's concerned is you know, when Zimmer said tweak, all along I was thinking hamstring, honestly, without knowing. I just assumed that that's what it was. But when you say it's neck, that makes you nervous, Judd. I mean, because that is definitely one that you don't rush back from, and that's one you have to be 100% sure that it's everything's, you know, healed and supported and stabilized and everything. So no, it's not. Anytime someone starts talking about brain or neck that or spine, that's when you start getting really nervous about one, their individual health, but two is how long is that going to take them to recover from?
And the problem too is if we fairly factor in his contract, which is as team friendly as it possibly gets. And this guy's not a good player. This guy's a star. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame him one bit, to be clear. I don't want anyone saying that I am putting the onus on the player here. But if I'm Hunter and it's a neck problem, I ain't coming back until I am 1,000% sure I'm fine. So, like this is not I tweaked my knee, and I can probably play through that. You know, stick a brace on my knee or a harness on my shoulder. This is your neck, your contract from your standpoint. And I know that you signed it, positively stinks. So I am not playing until I am absolutely, I've got my own doctors and told you can't do any more damage.
Yeah, and I would hope that would be the case regardless if you were the highest paid or the lowest paid, you know, because that's just, you know, your career is too, you know, you just don't mess with an injury like that, right? And we don't know the severity of it. I mean, we have no idea. I think Courtney reported that it was a neck. And so we don't know what the specifics are. But I go back to, was it Mike Hughes, right? Reported had
vertebrae.
Neck injury.
Yeah, vertebrae, yes.
And so now that came back and he was fine. He was able to play. But I remember in offseason when you first hear that, you're thinking, you know, is this something? And Zimmer downplayed it at the time. And obviously it wasn't as severe as, you know, I just think anytime you hear neck injury, that's what it makes you nervous, right? And you're like, you know, that has to be 100% healed. You're right. It's not like, you know, can you tape up an ankle and play on it? Or can you, you know, wrap up a shoulder, put a harness on and play through a shoulder or a club, you know, if you have a broken hand or something. This is, you know, a totally different thing you're dealing with. And so, yeah, and that's why I think if they're not going to be, you know, forthcoming about the injury, and it's, you know, they're right. But to wonder if this is really going to be 3 weeks or is it going to be longer than that?
So to go back to your point about the cornerbacks here too, Chipper, Holton Hill and Hughes, it sounds like they're going to be the starters on the outside. Mm-hmm. Cameron Dantzler or Gladney will probably come in the nickel, and Hughes will either go inside or I think it would be Dantzler could. What is your expectation there now given this? Because I'm with you completely. I think the trickle down of now not having a left end who would have combined with Ngakoue on the right side to, you know, potentially put tremendous pressure on a quarterback, I think that changes the equation completely as far as the litany of veteran quarterbacks that the Vikings are going to face. Yeah. and the potential time now that they're going to have to throw. I think that there's only a fair amount expectation-wise that you can expect young corners to do against a lot of the quarterbacks the Vikings are going to face.
Yeah, you wonder if Zimmer now will have to blitz more, which he doesn't like to do. He likes to get it with his front four. But if they don't get the same kind of pass rush without Hunter in there, then you know, you're just asking those guys to have to cover longer. And this weekend will be the litmus test, right, Judd? Because how many times have we seen Aaron Rodgers pick on a guy? And he, you yes. know, I mean, think about it, over the years.
Oh my God,
Chris Cook or whoever, when he sees a guy, whether he's young or a veteran who he just thinks he can go at, he picks on him. And so it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, how he approaches it and if he goes at those young guys or, because that's kind of his MO. He will pick on a guy. And so, it's, you know, obviously their whole mindset was get two great edge pass rushers and create havoc for the quarterback and not allow him to have much time. And I just don't think you can sit here and say their pass rush is going to be as effective without Hunter, because it's not. I mean, no, you know, it's not a knock on those guys, but he's one of the, you know, top premier edge rushers in the game. And so it'll be interesting to see if Zimmer has to get a little more creative to try to generate pressure just to help those guys on the back end out so they're not having to cover so long.
Here's what scares me, Chip Scoggins, from a Vikings defensive, and in particular, I guess, the line standpoint, okay? Ngakoue, I think, should be fine, should be good at right end. But
Judd, stop there. Is he up to speed with the, you know, where's his conditioning? Where's it? And where's he with the system? Now, it's not like you know, a lot of it might just be go rush the passer, but there's some question marks about, you know, initially. I mean, he's going to be fine, obviously, long term. He's elite, sure. But initially, just kind of what shape he in. So, yeah.
Okay. So, but let's say the Vikings are three games in and he is in shape and up to speed and he's fine. All right. Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's good. Here's what scared me, though, from day one of camp with Michael Pierce opting out. Jahlil Johnson and Shamar Stephen inside.
Yeah,
that is going to bring your run defense down a few pegs. I don't think it's a debate. They're both okay players, but you know, in his prime, Linval Joseph was damn good. He was really good, and Pierce was supposed to step in and be the Vikings' marquee free agent pickup because he was supposed to, in this system, become damn good, right? And mm-hmm. So they're gone now, and so let's just start from a run game again standpoint. You're going to have teams now be able to, for the most part, go up the gut against the Vikings. That's going to make Eric Kendricks less effective.
Yeah.
And now I think the one thing that we thought post-Ngakoue trade was, okay, that's not ideal, but you're going to have Hunter rushing from the left end and Ngakoue from the right end, and that's going to help make up from a pass game standpoint. Well, now that's gone, and all of the focus that probably would have to been given in some way, shape, or form by opponents that would have been split between Ngakoue and Hunter can now all go to the right end side with Ngakoue. Long story short, I just think there's going to be a lot of ways for teams to scheme to beat this defense. And I know at its core, it's a sound defensive scheme. I just don't know now, Chip, if the parts are going to be there for it to realistically be anywhere as close to what we're used to seeing in 2020.
Yeah, and you know, the Pierce loss is obviously huge because, let's be honest, they go out and get a guy because they think he's better than you, right? And so to think that there's not a drop-off, you're a backup. They went and got a guy because they didn't think you're as good as what they need. And so that's not, you know, being mean. It's just a fact, right? I mean, if they go out and get a veteran receiver over you, it's because they think he's better than you. And so, yeah, so it's – but they're going to have to take away something, Judd. I mean, it's whether it's the run or passing. That, you know, they've done a good job in the run, you know, in the past. And so if they can't stop the run, then it's, you know, as coaches always say, then everything, the whole entire playbook's open to them. And so and here's another concern. And I know these guys have been healthy and they play a lot.
Sure.
They play a lot. But, Judd, you got two safeties on the roster.
I know. That's a whole other thing. I mean, I know.
I know this. I know they're gonna. My guess is they're gonna wait till after week one and pick up a veteran, but that's another issue. I mean, you know, you hope those guys don't get injured, but I don't think I've ever seen just having two safeties on it.
No, and if Smith goes down, I think they're in huge trouble. But hey, how surprised are you that we are just about to opening day? And look, this could change in the next couple days. How surprised are you that we're still talking here, though, and that Dalvin Cook didn't get a contract extension?
I can be honest, I'm shocked, Judd. I just thought this would be a typical Vikings thing where, you know, there's a little bit of posturing, but they get it done, and because they just always seem to get things done, right? I mean, it always just seems to come together with their homegrown talent. And so I don't know if he's getting just horrendous advice from his agent at this point. I don't know what the offer is on the table. Sounds like there's not a whole lot of dialogue and they both dug in, but, you know, if I'm Dalvin now, if they're completely low balling him, I understand it, but if he's being unreasonable and he's looking at, you know, what some of the other, you know, top running backs are getting and think he deserves that and is going to get that, I think he may just have to, you know, come to the realization that he's not getting $14 million a year. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, and I don't know what he's holding out for. Like I said, I don't know what the number is, but I'm surprised. I really am. I thought it'd be done the week of when they started camp, because that's typically how they do it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know much about his agent, but he's, you know, he's gambling. That's for sure. I mean, you know, if you get injured this year, the money is not going to be anywhere probably what is on the table right now for the offer.
I'd love to know what the offer was that the Vikings took off the table about a month ago now, because if that offer was anywhere close to being what like Joe Mixon got, and they didn't take
Mixon's
it, they were crazy.
Was it 10 million?
He's going to average. It was a average of 12 mil per year.
Oh, I mean that. I can't imagine they would turn that down. I was thinking, I thought all along that it would wind up being in the 10 to 11 million per year.
But if that was the case, they should have taken that.
For sure. I think that's a reasonable contract. Because of his injury history, Joe, he just hasn't been on the field enough. And I understand, you know, players always see their value differently than reporters and fans, you know, and they have built the offense around him, but man, if the offer was anywhere from 10 to 12 million, and they turned it down. I think that's a bad decision on his part. I really do.
Well, and I just don't understand how he is being allowed by his representation to start playing on the last year of this contract, given the fact that, back to your point, he's been hurt before. And, you know, God forbid he blows his knee out on Sunday. Like, then you're just done. Then you're done. And I don't, you know, so look, He plays a position where it's controversial as far as what guys get there, and I know that the value on running backs is not near what it used to be when we were kids and it was considered a sexy position. I get all that, but I just don't understand how his representatives are allowing him to play now. And the other problem, too, so I appreciate that the Vikings as an organization are going to hold their ground based on the fact the cap's going to come down in 2021. And based on the fact that I'm torn myself about how much I value and would pay this spot right now. That being said, here's your 2020 conundrum, Chipper. If Dalvin Cook so much as gets a hangnail, he's not going to play, and he can't play. Like, he will have to bag out, and he should. If he and he gets dinged up, and of course backs do chip a lot.
But if
you think about this, if on Sunday he gets banged up, and let's just say it's a bruise, bad knee bruise or something, or he tweaks something, he can't play in week two, or he's absolutely crazy. So this does give him incentive actually to be responsible in pulling himself out more, because if I have any fear that I'm going to go into my next game and re-aggravate, or, you know, if it's a hamstring or make it worse, I can't play. I'm not going to play.
Yeah, and it's, you know, running backs only get, and I mean every NFL player, but particularly running backs, they only get so many bites of that big apple, right?
Correct.
And here's the thing, Jed. Let's say he has just a really, you know, great year, plays most of the games, highly productive. Do you really think a team's going to break the bank on him next? I mean, the same set of circumstances are going to be there, right? The same counter argument about overpaying for running backs. I mean, those things are not going away, you know? He has a chance to prove that he can stay healthy, but I think kind of the philosophical shift in how running backs are viewed, that's not going to change this year, you know? So that's why I'm perplexed by this. And you're right. I mean, and I wasn't on his Zoom this week. Maybe you were, but
I went back and watched it. I was not on it live.
The one quote that jumped out where he said, "You just hope that the Vikings, or whatever, they understand your value and you get rewarded for your value." Was he testy on that, or how was his tone? Would you say?
Was he
annoyed? Could you tell he was annoyed by this?
He didn't seem as testy or annoyed as he did, just sort of beaten up and down. I think I sense he might be a sensitive kid. And I think he's taken this hard, and I think he should. And I don't know his reps, agents at all.
Yeah.
But I just wonder what type of advice he's getting. Because he's sort of on this island of no, I'm not gonna sign. And then the Vikings are like, fine, the contract's off the table. And he seems beaten up, and I don't blame him. But again, this goes back to, at some point in time, you probably should just accept your fate as far as your value goes and your position goes, and sign something that gives you assurances, because that's what he totally lacks right now, any assurances.
Yeah, and the thing is, again, I don't know what the final offer or whatever that was on the table, but the Vikings don't have a history of lowballing guys, right?
Not guys, not young guys they like. They do not.
I mean, they have spent a lot on talent that they drafted and developed. And we've seen, I mean, you can go down the roster, guys that got big contracts, and they've kind of had to reconfigure here because of, you know, some of those contracts and guys got older. But I don't think there's been many where you say, there's been some, you can even say Danielle Hunter's, like, that's a team-friendly contract. It's a lot of money, but he's not being paid as one of the top edge rushers, but at the time, you know, it was a good contract for him. So I would be surprised if it came back and say, man, they really gave an offer that was insulting. You know, maybe it is, but I would be surprised, because that's not really been the MO here in the last, 6 years with guys that they've drafted and developed.
And how can Cook win here too? Because if Cook gets dinged up, he has to sit. He almost just has to. But then, so let's say he sits out four games, okay? Gets dinged up four times or something. Then he's going to hit the market in March, and to your point, try and get this huge payday, but it's instantly going to be used against him that he didn't play in X amount of games again in 2020. But yet if he plays in those games and something goes wrong, that then his value is potentially shot. So I guess my point is, I don't know what the win here is for him at this point. He's in a very, very sticky predicament.
Well, somebody asked me a while back, like, how would you think he'd sit out a game in protest? I'm like, boy, that would be a real gamble, because imagine if you sat out and then Alexander Mattson had a great game, or, you know, a great couple games. Now you've lost all leverage, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
And you win, you've lost completely. Because then they could say, well, why would we pay you if we're getting, you know, competent production from the backup and we're winning? And so I don't think he would play that game, you know, and I don't think that's who he is. And he said this week that if Zimmer calls his name, he's going to play, even though he didn't have a contract. And I don't, you know, I think he's a hard-nosed competitor and loves the game. And so I would be surprised if he did that, if he took that option. But you're right. Just the health component of it is, you know, if he doesn't play all, you know, I'm not saying he's played every game, but if he misses four or five games, that's going to just further validate the argument that why would you break the bank for a running back that, you know, hasn't stayed healthy yet.
Hey, what's your prediction about how much of an advantage the Vikings are going to lose in at least their first two home games with no fans? Because I think it's an underrated, huge storyline.
Yeah, I wrote about this for my column this week, Colin Judd, that I think it's, you know, we've seen, whether it's the Metrodome or U.S. Bank Stadium, how much of an advantage that is. So it's got to be a top, what, 3-4 row of noise, I would think.
Seattle, New Orleans, Minnesota. Yes. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Kansas City.
Yep.
And we've seen, I remember, and I checked with the Vikings, you know, even, and it's louder than the Metrodome, a little bit, you know, but they are always one of the top teams in terms of opponent false starts. Judd, how many times we've sat there where a quarterback looks rattled, he can't get the play off, and it, you can just see where the noise affects him. I checked with the Vikings, and on typical, you know, key third downs, the decibel level often gets 115 there, which is, you know, that's just loud.
Yes.
And it has an effect. And so to lose that, I think it's a big deal. And I talked to Jared Allen and Ben Lieber this week about that. And they both said it's going to be a significant disadvantage, or, you know, not the same advantage they have, because, you know, Jared said, you know, when I'm in my stance and the guy has to look, the tackle has to look down the line at the ball to see when it's being snapped.
Yep.
That's a split second. And, Ben made a good point that he thinks that smart quarterbacks are going to be able to hear the defensive audibles and pick them up, because you're just going to hear a lot more stuff on the field that you wouldn't hear. So that they might be able to play off that, or linemen will be able to hear when defense linemen are calling out their stunts or their different games that they're going to play, that they'll be able to pick up on that. So he thinks in some ways, you know, the offense is going to have a little bit more unique perspective than normal. So I think it's a big deal. I mean, I really do. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, it's hard to quantify, but you can see it with your eyes when an offense gets rattled by that noise, and we've seen it time and time again over the years.
So my thought is opposing tackles will be able to hear the calls now instead of going to silent counts, and not the best QBs, but the tier of QBs who are either young or veteran guys who get frazzled are going to be able to think. And to me, that is a huge thing, because we have seen you were saying, Chip Scoggins, we have seen veteran QBs who aren't necessarily great come into the Metrodome and now U.S. Bank Stadium and really get just rattled. And so I think that, as a starting point, is going to be huge, because, you know, I mean, that's a big part of what that defense has done for years. It's caused teams to really just basically lose their cool, and that's based a lot on what the noise was.
Yeah, and I would say, I don't know that it's ever rattled Aaron Rodgers, but it's rattled his offensive line, without a doubt. I mean, we've seen them get discombobulated with, you know, calls and having to go on a silent count, and it's just an extra beat. Like, you know, whether it's Jared or Everson or Daniil, just that pass rush is just different at home when, you know, like I said, the tackles are having to look down the line to see when it's snapped or they can't hear. You just have like a head start, you know? And so, but conversely, on the other side, they're playing at Seattle and at New Orleans this year. So
here's my question. By the time that we, for instance, get to the Saints game on Christmas Day, are there fans allowed in?
I don't, you know what? Seattle, there won't be when they get out there. But I don't think enough to really make it to where it's hard. I mean, do you think they're going to allow a full stadium in December? in New Orleans? I would be surprised. Wouldn't you?
Yes, I would be. Yeah,
even half. Okay. You know, that seems ambitious by December to have half of the stadium, but if it's half, you know, it'll be a reasonably loud, but it's not the same as having a full stadium. So I don't think anywhere this year is going to be so intimidating or so disruptive that you have to have a silent count. I mean, a half stadium, half full stadium, you're not going to have it. A silent count. I wouldn't think.
No,
you know,
that's probably true.
I'm curious to see, you know, the league is setting it at 70 decibels, which is, the crowd noise that they're giving everybody, which
it's nothing.
It's like a vacuum cleaner.
It's
vacuum
nothing.
Cleaner. You can't even. Was that 70 when we were in there for the?
I think they said it was.
Practice?
Yes, it's absolutely.
You couldn't hear anything.
No. It sounds like the white noise that you would turn on from like a fan while you sleep.
Yeah.
It's just that continuous hum.
Yeah. It's gonna be weird because the baseball thing, okay, the first couple weeks, it was odd. But I got to be honest with you, it doesn't really – I don't think about it now. I think with football, that's the one sport where you got to have noise, where it actually plays a role in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hockey and basketball, do you ever say, man, that crowd really affected that game? Maybe, you know, maybe basketball a little, you know. Baseball, I don't think enough to really comment on it. But football, for sure, we've seen it, you know. It affects the crowd noise affects the other team in a way that other sports I don't think really does. And so it's going to be weird. I mean, that part I think is going to really have an impact on games.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure they'll play the skull chant and things like that, but, I'm with you. It's going to be more weird than it is like, oh yeah, there's the skull chant. So
yeah. Yeah.
Do you think prediction, when are we going to see Big Ten football?
Man, if you follow social media, either October 15th, November 1st, November 15th, December 1st.
Yeah, next season, Christmas.
Yeah. I don't know, Judd. I think it really does come down to testing and having enough tests available where you can test two or three times a week. I'm going to say early January.
Okay, so that far off. Okay.
Yeah, I was, you know.
With pods, Chipper?
Yeah. That's
so like Detroit, Minneapolis.
That's the only way to do it. And I was talking to some writer friends that, you know, I'd be here, Detroit, Indy, somewhere out east. I don't know where they would play them there, maybe Syracuse. But, you know, someone mentioned to me, they wouldn't even be surprised if Iowa used the Northern Iowa Dome, you know.
Oh, okay.
If you're not letting in fans or just a small percentage of fans, the size doesn't really matter. The field's not going to change. The size of the venue doesn't matter if it's going to be mostly empty. So I would say whatever's the most convenient and cost effective. But, you know, it is amazing how much pressure Kevin Ward and those presidents are under to change their opinion or their ruling. You know, maybe they hear enough positive feedback from, you know, the scientists in terms of,
it doesn't feel like they're changing, though. Like I keep seeing tweets from the president and stuff saying Big Ten football is going to start soon. I'm yet to see a definitive statement from the Big Ten, and I'm not talking Jim Harbaugh or the Nebraska program, that says, oh, yeah, you know what? By the way, we are going to start soon.
No, they came out, you know, with the Republican senators that sent the letter this week. The Big Ten responded just saying, we have the same goal. We're trying to get out as soon as possible and get back on the field as soon as possible whenever it's safe. And so I don't know if they need testing and or fewer cases on campus. And that's the thing when you're seeing these college campuses, man, they're just, you know, Wisconsin today, I think, or yesterday, had to go to online classes for 2 weeks.
They just shut them down. Yeah.
Yeah.
They quarantined dorms, entire dorms.
I believe Ohio State went through it too. Did they pause?
I don't know about that one.
I think they may have paused some sports too. So it's like you're seeing these, you know, whenever there's a hotspot, schools are taking like a, you know, a week to 10 days or 2 week pause in their workouts and stuff. And so I don't know how that affects, you know, their things, but you know, it's weird though, Judge. I mean, you know, I'm watching the other night, I watched high school football on ESPN, and then last Saturday I watched college football.
Yeah.
So
I know.
It is, I think, you know, ultimately they may be proven right. I just don't know what really what the right thing is. It's just so complicated because it's weird when you see two totally different answers and two totally different ways of going about it. You know, one, we're not going to play, and now you're seeing all these, you know, now they're going to crank up in full here with the big program starting to play in the next couple of weeks. So I don't know what the right answer is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and what I saw that there was a game that was supposed to be on, I think, FS1 that was postponed because Louisiana Tech, if I'm not mistaken, had an outbreak. And yeah, so they moved up a Kansas State game. So, yeah.
Yeah, theirs was a when they had the hurricane, power went out. If I'm reading it right, power went out until the students kind of dispersed the different areas. They weren't in kind of their little quasi bubble, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
And so they had a lot of positive tests when kids scattered and went either home or elsewhere. And so that's, they think that's what created their spike, but yeah, that's what you're seeing, a lot of games postponed and moved. And so, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull this off. I mean, my beloved Vols, the other week, they had to cancel a scrimmage because I think they had 40 something positive tests, you know, so they were going to have their one big scrimmage before playing, and they had to cancel that. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to work or not, Joe, but it is interesting that, you know, some are willing to try and some are just, you know, are saying no. So,
but I think you're right in, and I think this is what too many people won't say. We don't know. Like,
well, that's it.
The Big Ten could be exactly right, and they could be being too cautious. But, and the one thing that I find about this entire thing, Chipper, that fascinates me so much is this one. So many people, i.e. coaches, who ordinarily have complete control of things, have lost control.
Yeah.
And watching some of them, Harbaugh and Frost, and how they sort of melt down, it's an interesting look into the psyche of people that are so used to basically controlling the environment around them completely. And this is just one where, unfortunately, you can't do that.
No, it is. I mean, football coaches by nature, you know, control freaks, and they want to be able to have their handprints on everything. But, you know, I keep coming back to, and, you know, you see people like the Big Ten, just they want this to happen. They don't, you know, it's like, are you crazy? They're losing.
Oh, I know.
Millions upon millions. They're cutting sports. This is not what they want. You know, it's like, what person in their right mind would want to sabotage their athletic department just for the sake of doing it? You know, it's like, no, they're listening to the people, the scientists and the doctors who are,
yes,
telling them this is not what they want to do. That line of thinking is just nuts. But yeah, it's, you know, but to kind of pivot off that, think about NFL, where their testing is right now.
Yep.
They have hardly any cases, Judd. And Major League Baseball, I mean, I know they have, you know, occasional games get postponed, but by and large, it's worked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
By and large. I mean, the NFL, I think you have to give those a lot of credit, because in the latest round of testing that just came out, I think there was only maybe one or two players that tested positive. And so, you know, I was skeptical whether the NFL was going to be able to make it work, and we'll see if they can do it over, you know, the course of a season. But so
right,
far, so good, and the diligence that they're showing.
Well, baseball didn't have it right when they started, and I don't know what football is doing in particular. But you know where baseball finally got smart was they basically threatened them. They said, you know, when you go on the road, you are not to leave. And that's, mm-hmm, the thing is, but I mean, that's the price of this entire experimentation of playing during a pandemic. You have to threaten people, and you have to say, I mean, you know what? The bubbles are fantastic. I'm sure it sucks not to see your family, but the, mm-hmm, bubbles are the best. And if you can take human beings and basically say, you are here for entertainment purposes, which is to play a sport, and your life is basically gone besides that. You can go play games with your buddies, right? Mm-hmm. And go eat good meals in the bubble. But as far as what you're used to, that's gone. That's just a big ask. So that to me, you know, baseball was like, yeah, guys can go out, and the Cardinals here. Supposedly, there were some asymptomatic Cardinals players when they played here against the Twins that went into hotel rooms with their buddies, right, to do stuff. And they spread it like wildfire. And I think, mm-hmm, after that, they told players, You can't go into each other's rooms. You're all going to be blah, blah, blah. And it probably stinks. But I think if you're willing to pay that price, we can do this. The issue is I've never been able to decide across the board, like, can you get an entire football team to pay that price? And I don't know the answer.
Well, yeah, I mean, so far, so good, I think, for the NFL, because you're just not seeing any cases. You know, for the NFL, let's talk about it. Let's see what happens in, you know, Victory Mondays or after games.
Exactly.
If they stick to it. And college is a totally different beast, Judge.
Yep.
I mean, we know. You're dealing, one, you're on a campus where kids are going to bars or having house parties. I mean, it's just, hey, I have a college kid. I know exactly what they're doing. And I probably would do the same thing, too, when I was that age. And so that's just a lot harder to control. And we've seen the pictures of the kids lined up at the bars. And you know, we can, you know, gnash our teeth and say they're idiots and do all that, but they're college kids. I mean, you know, that's, I hate to give them a pass on it, but that, to think that they're not going to do that is probably naive. You know? So I think it'd be harder on a it's going to be harder on a college campus to control it as much as you can in the NFL, where I think these guys are professionals and they, you know, they're just not around as many.
And you can threaten them.
College kids.
If I pay you, I can threaten you. If you're a college kid, what's my threat?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. And you know, in the Cleveland Indians, when the pitcher.
Yeah, Clevinger.
Clevinger went out, they put his butt in the car, told him to drive
home. They abused him on purpose to make an example, and that's exactly right. But, you know, if I pay you, I can basically tell you what you can and can't do, and your option is to quit and lose that payday. If you're a college kid, and that's the thing, is I've seen this pushback on college kids, like, how dare they? They're college kids, and they're not paid. That's the other thing, is if you were giving them salaries, then I think you could threaten them.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to get paid, or we'll cut you.
Yep.
Or they're, you know, if a kid goes to a bar or house party, they're not taking a scholarship from them. Now, you may have to, you know, get up and run at 6 a.m., you know, there's punishment that way, but they're not, it's, you know, there's no financial penalty that you can hit them with.
Like, absolutely.
In NFL and pro sports.
Absolutely. All right, Chipper. I'll talk to you next week. All right.
Press box Sunday.
See you on set. See you later.
Right.
Bye.